The Morning Show. The home team. No, it's both. It's the crossover.
Crossover, step back!
Right here on 960theref.com.
All right, this is episode number 172 of the Crossover Podcast. David Johnston from The Morning Show, Jeff Dantzler from The Home Team. Thanks so much for joining us here on, again, the Crossover Podcast here on 960 The Ref, 960theref.com, and, of course, the great 960 The Ref app. And if you got to us without going through the app, we would love for you to download it. You can go to the App Store on your iPhone, Google Play on your Android, and you will love it. You can do a lot of stuff with the 960 The Ref app, including listen to live Georgia sports. If you're within 75 miles of the old geofence, you can hear Jeff calling the Lady Dogs. We got baseball season coming up here in less than a month. Of course, Scott, Chuck with the Georgia basketball games and all kinds of good stuff. One of the cool things, too, on the app, the old open mic feature. So you can tell us something in your own voice. You got 30 seconds, but it'll get to us. You don't even have to identify yourself. So, again, the 960 The Ref app, very cool, and we love it. And we are recording this on Wednesday afternoon. The SEC football schedule just dropped less than an hour ago, so we're excited. Jeff walks in. The first thing he does with this helmet schedule that we have here is, how many teams have a bye before they play Georgia? And looking through, believe it or not, none.
Just Georgia and Florida.
Yeah, don't know about the non-conference games, but yeah, just the Georgia and Florida. I guess technically, yeah, Florida does, but I don't count that since we've got one too.
I agree with you. And we had, remember, 2 years ago, there were five teams that had byes before Georgia. And now Georgia did share a bye with two of those. But basically, the way the schedule sets up this year, we knew the Dogs would open with Clemson and close with Tech. Georgia plays UAB the week after Clemson. Don't sleep on them. And Charleston Southern before Tech. So two games that Georgia should win. And then you got eight SEC games squeezed in there in between. Georgia goes South Carolina at Vandy, Arkansas at Auburn, Kentucky, then the open date, then the Gators in Missouri, and at Tennessee. So it's going to be a lot of fun. And I think with all the craziness of last year, the SEC kind of landed onto something when they did their schedule releases, so everybody was waiting around. Remember, DJ, that the last few years we'd find out about it around November. I remember, I think in the 2018 season, we were sitting there, it might have been the week of the Auburn game, and hey, here's next year's schedule. But now that they've gone out and made a big deal out of it, it's really nice to see. And once again, you've got some high-profile games. Obviously, Georgia and Clemson, Alabama is playing the Miami Hurricanes, LSU going to UCLA, Ole Miss is playing Louisville. So there are a lot of games that are going to draw a lot of that national attention.
And looking at the Georgia schedule, I know there's Clemson and Charlotte. There are six home games. There's not a blockbuster of a home game for the Bulldogs this year. But this is a very, very, very doable schedule when you're talking about winning the East and winning the SEC championship and potentially getting to the college football playoff.
I agree with you 100% there, DJ. No matter what happens with Clemson, Georgia's got a golden opportunity. You talk about priorities. Georgia obviously needs to win at Tech and go undefeated at home. Mm-hmm. And I think if you can accomplish that, that would also be avoiding the major upsets there. And then, you know, can the Dogs in those other, five games find a way to go 4-1, who knows, maybe 3-2 if it was. I think Auburn's going to be good this year. So let's say if Georgia fell in a close one to Clemson and lost a tight one to Auburn, if the Dogs found themselves 10-2 playing, say, Alabama or Auburn, who was 11-1 or 12-0 in the SEC championship, would a win there get the Dogs in? Similar to the situation Auburn was in 2017. When Georgia beat the Tigers in the SEC championship, I would guess that it would. So I agree with you, DJ. I think the schedule and with what Georgia's got coming back, and we all know the secondary situation, but I think the Dogs, the schedule sets up. It's never going to be easy in the SEC, but it sets up as nicely as you could possibly ask.
You know, and the thing, too, Georgia's going to be a double-digit favorite, or should be a double-digit favorite in every home game.
Mm-hmm.
UAB, South Carolina, Arkansas, Kentucky, and Missouri. I mean, I would be surprised if Georgia's not a double-digit favorite in every one of those games. And then you look at the games away from Athens. Georgia only has three true road games in the conference. Vandy, which, of course, September 25th, might get ugly. Potentially,
so.
Yes. The game at Auburn October 9th is certainly the most interesting one. And then, November 13th at Tennessee also. But let's talk about that Auburn game October 9th. And, you know, we're seeing the ramifications of the schedule where Georgia's playing Auburn in October and Tennessee in November, which is going to take a lot of getting used to. They didn't do Auburn any favors, Jeff. Auburn has to play at LSU the week before they host Georgia.
That was one of the first things I looked for, because Auburn, for whatever reason, is just red flagging for me coming into this year. And peeking ahead to November, Tennessee goes to Kentucky the week before playing Georgia, which again gets back to,
yeah,
as you pointed out, you know, if you take away Florida, where Georgia and Florida both have the open date, nobody having that open date. So Auburn is going to be in a slugfest with LSU. You know, Georgia's going to play Arkansas. That'll be a tough and physical game. We know that. But I think that, again, sets up as nicely as you could possibly ask for Georgia and the Deep South's oldest rivalry.
Yeah, and I like the fact, too, that, again, and I Auburn always gives me red flags, so that's not anything different, but they could be playing a night game, mm-hmm, at LSU on a Saturday night while Georgia might get an earlier game. I don't know, maybe the Arkansas game will be a night game too here in Athens, but the Dogs will be at home and Auburn will be on the road the week before, so they're going to have a little bit of a shorter week. Some people kind of dismiss that, oh, playing a night game on the road when you've got a big game the following week, and you might be thinking that we're splitting hairs talking about getting home in the middle of the night on Sunday morning, but it there's a little bit to that.
It matters.
Yeah.
You're behind getting started. Dave, I remember the week leading up to the South Carolina game in 2019, I was saying on this show and on some pregame shows that I was extraordinarily worried because we had a night game at Tennessee and South Carolina had an open date. I'm like, this, and we had a noon kickoff. Mm-hmm. Night game on the road, then a noon kickoff. This is a very, very short week, and it's worrisome. And I'm saying that,
yeah,
the whole time. Then we lose, and people are tweeting that, well, you're just making excuses. I'm not making excuses. Like, I was saying this
I've
all
been
week.
I've been saying this.
This was concerning coming in. So you're exactly right, Dave. That's the other thing, you know, when you start going through, can you get those little breaks and not have to play too many of those 7 o'clocks away from home, followed by the,
yeah,
noon, the
it
next
makes a
week.
Difference.
It certainly does.
And I think the schedule, again, sets up very nicely. And also, it was Connor Riley that wrote this on Dog Nation. At least that was the first place I saw it, and it's an interesting point. All three of Georgia's SEC road games are against teams with a new coach.
Good point,
yeah,
there. And Auburn, this is interesting. They usually have a softer one for later, but they're going to be working on building confidence. They go Akron, Alabama State, then they go to Penn State, then host Georgia State. So they, you know, even if they lose at Penn State, ought to have the numbers clicking there, and then they go to LSU and host the Dogs. But that is interesting scheduling there, and maybe it pays off for them early. But the problem then in the back half of that, they go leading into the Alabama game. It's Ole Miss at A&M, Mississippi State at South Carolina, and then Alabama. So you kind of hit that gauntlet that they don't have one of the softer ones there early.
No, I think in looking at their schedule, they got a stretch of four games where three of them are at Penn State, at LSU, and Georgia at home. And then on the back end,
mm-hmm,
you know, they got a four-game stretch where they have Texas A&M November 6th and then finish at home against Alabama. So they got a tough schedule. I know we hadn't had a chance to sit there and grind out. I mean, we're literally just looking at the helmet,
sure,
schedule. This just came out, so we hadn't had a chance to take every single thing in. But Brian Harsin has inherited a pretty tough schedule there at Auburn.
He certainly has.
But if you're an SEC West coach, You've got a tough schedule matter what.
And especially now when you look at, say, Mississippi State, for example, with Mike Leach in there, I don't think they're going to go 10-2 or 11-1. But because of the offense he runs, they're not an easy out. You better be. It reminds you.
And that's the thing. It's a good point. Look at their September 25th. They're home against LSU. October 2nd at A&M. They do have an off week. And then October 16th, Bama. But that's the thing. For those three teams, he's not a given. He's not an easy out.
No, and I think the thing before, and this is not a knock on Joe Moorhead. I think the guy's a good football coach. But for Mississippi State, for Kentucky in the East, remember how much more you used to worry when they had Hal Mummy there, because mm-hmm. it was, I don't want to say, a gimmick's not a good word, but they had their niche in what they did. That niche was not going to be good enough to get them the SEC
right.
championship game, but was it good enough if you got hot on a given day? Absolutely.
Sure.
And just look no further, DJ, than opening day 2020. And I know LSU was down from their super team in 19, but Mississippi State goes out there day one and throws for over 600 yards and beats the defending champs. You know, who saw that
That's
coming?
Right. So that's a revenge game for LSU.
That's right.
Mississippi State better look out.
But I love looking at this. And again, I left out, I think, the Auburn-Penn State one earlier when I was talking about it. But to get Georgia, Clemson, Alabama, Miami, Auburn, Penn State, LSU, and UCLA. So you do have some good high-profile games. But once again, Georgia's in a spot. When you look at Georgia, at Florida, and South Carolina, Georgia is the school that is playing along with, obviously, you got Clemson, South Carolina, and Florida State. Georgia's also playing Clemson. South Carolina, along with playing Clemson, is playing Troy, East Carolina, and Eastern Illinois. And Florida just continues to underwhelm with their schedule besides FSU, as they've got Samford, South Florida, and Florida Atlantic.
So they play Florida Atlantic, South Florida, and Florida State. So a fourth of their schedule is Florida teams.
So if you're looking at it, I would guess, is Georgia the only team playing 10 Power Fives just off the top of my – Tennessee's got Pitt, so yeah, you would have to throw Tennessee in there as well, but no go for Texas A&M, and you know, not for Alabama. You know, Auburn does have Penn State, but three softies there. So Georgia's done a great job of scheduling since that 12th game came in.
So that's a good point. That kind of takes me down the road I wanted to go to next. With like, let's look specifically at Georgia's schedule now instead of the SEC.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point you bring up. So Georgia has 10 Power 5 games. And UAB, like you said, that ain't a gimme by any means.
As we know this, and Dave, we say this in baseball all the time, you play a team from the South,
yeah,
they're going to have good players.
They're going to have good players, and they're going to have a chip on their shoulder.
And just because the guy's a defensive end and he's 5'11", 240,
yeah,
he wasn't recruited by Alabama
right.
or Auburn or Georgia, doesn't mean he's not a good player. He just didn't fit yeah. the physical parameters.
Hey, look, and it was a generation ago, I understand, but UAB almost won here in Athens.
Got that right. In 2003, that was
yeah.
Scary.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. I think that's the game where Russ Tanner tells the story of a guy got by him and he basically had to tackle him to save Greeny from getting sacked. And Greeny, I mean, it was a 15-yard penalty, but Greeny was like, appreciate that.
I didn't
need to get hit on that one.
Sometimes
anyway,
you get beat.
It's a funny story the way he tells it, but here's a couple. All right, so the schedule itself, the home schedule is not the greatest one, but here's a few things I do like about it. There's only one instance of the schedule where you have back-to-back home games,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's good because that means you don't have like three or four in a row, and then you're away for a good portion of the schedule. And the other thing I like about it is we've got two games in October.
Hallelujah.
At home, I know.
Hallelujah.
And we've had schedules where we didn't have any October games.
Yeah, we've gone 0-4 in Arkansas and Kentucky, so you hope good weather there. And I think, Dave, with that point as well, Georgia does not have back-to-back games where the Dogs are away from home. And two
right.
of those road games, Vanderbilt and Tech, Georgia figures to have 50% plus.
Mm-hmm.
We just got past not just a plurality, but a majority of fans in those two stadiums.
Sure.
And, I mean, I just remember looking at the 19 schedule when we opened at Vandy and closed at Tech, saying, you know what, we're going to have more people than them in both of those games. Mm-hmm. So that's a good thing. So, yeah, the six home games, the one neutral with Clemson and the one neutral with Florida, where it figures to be 50-50. And Georgia figures to have plus attendance against both Vandy and Tech. So, really, if you're talking about raucous crowds going against you, you're looking at Auburn and Tennessee.
Sure. But is the schedule doable? Yes, it is.
Yes.
And I kind of envision the Clemson game as almost like an NFL preseason game. And just by that, I mean, it's not that I don't want to win, but for either team, mm-hmm. the one that loses the game, it's just one that you've got a good loss. You don't have a good win, obviously, but you got a good loss. And if you take care of business the rest of the season, it's probably not going to affect – well, it's certainly not going to affect your conference standing, and it probably won't affect your playoff standing if you want to look that far ahead too. I'd like to see Georgia beat Clemson, don't get me wrong, but that should be a whale of a game. And again, the team to me that doesn't win, and you've got a good loss under your belt, and you hope the other team has a great season, because that's what'll be talked about at the end of the year. By the way, this is kind of flown under the radar a little bit too. So Scott Strickland, the Florida AD, mm-hmm. and Todd Stansberry, the Tech AD, their time on the College Football Playoff Committee is done. So they're not on the committee anymore. So that also, I don't care what people say, that helps Georgia.
Let me tell you something, DJ. In 2018, those two guys were on it, and Oklahoma's AD, Joe Castiglione, was on it. So we wind up fifth, 2 years in a row in 18 and 19. And the bottom line is Oklahoma got our spot. Those are three votes you're not getting.
Right.
And there are 13 people on there. It's not going to happen. And I'm not blaming Scott Strickland or Todd Stansberry. That's just the way it is.
The way it worked out, exactly.
That's why, in Georgia's case, for any team you're looking to do this, but you've just got to leave no doubt whatsoever. And maybe this year things can get a little bit friendlier with that, because that Clemson game could certainly put the Dogs in a situation. I mean, again, let's just hypothesize Georgia loses to Clemson, okay, loses a league game, wins the SEC. Okay, at 11-2 as the SEC champs, do you go? Or let's say Georgia were to beat Clemson, run the table, lose in Atlanta, would Georgia get in then? I mean, once the season starts, I hate talking about stuff like that, but this time of year,
but it's the fun time to look at. That's the thing, and I'm like you, I don't want to put up doomsday scenarios, but the one thing about beating Clemson that you would have if you were to run the table, if you're seeing Darth Saban in mm-hmm. Atlanta for the championship and you don't beat him, if that's your only loss, do you still get to go to the playoff?
I felt like,
because if they were in that boat,
they're in. Well, that was one of the things that's I don't want to say softened the 2018 SEC championship loss. I was firmly convinced we were going to have a rematch with Alabama in the playoff for the Orange Bowl. Like that was such a great game. We're going to see it again had we won it. I think that's a valid point. And again, another example, we talked about Auburn in 2017 being a two-loss team with a shot at it. I felt if Georgia had upset LSU in 2019, they were already in the playoff, mm-hmm. in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, I just feel like different teams might be playing under different parameters. And by the way, mentioning those guys rolling off, coming on the committee, Mitch Barnhart from Kentucky, Boo Corrigan from NC State, Chris Del Conte from Texas. I don't know if Texas and Oklahoma, if that is much of a difference there. Will Shields, who played at Nebraska, and then Joe Taylor, former head coach and current AD at Virginia Union. So I'll take this trade for what was on there before, when you had, as you mentioned, Joe Castiglione, Ken Hatfield, who, by the way, he had Clemson. He was a head coach at Clemson at one point. Ronnie Lott, That guy could hit you.
Yeah, it could.
Todd Stansberry and Scott Strickland. So the five that rotated off and the five that rotated on, that's a plus for Georgia.
Well, again, when you're talking about your two biggest rivals, ADs on there, and then back-to-back years, you're vying for a spot with a school whose AD is on there. And it's one of those where they have to recuse themselves when they talk about their teams. Like, okay, but you can still vote against my team.
I think that stuff's – I mean, I get it. You have to do that, but I think that's way overrated when that's used. Well, he stepped out of the room.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Well, guess what? He ain't going to be voting for Georgia.
Yeah, he ain't going to be voting for Georgia, and he's around these people all the other time he's not stepped out of the room.
100%.
Yeah. All right. We'll certainly have a lot of time to talk about the schedule here between now and September 4th. I did want to mention a couple of other things and get your thoughts on Jeff. And let's start out with the new football coach at Tennessee, which that news came down this morning that Danny White, the new AD at Tennessee, is bringing his football coach with him. He hired Josh Heupel from Missouri, and he's been at UCF for 3 years. Now he takes a Tennessee job. So let me ask you your opinion on this. Is this Josh Heupel, who has done a great job? He's coached in the SEC. He's got great offensive numbers. He's a good developer of quarterbacks. Or is this Josh Heupel, who inherited a lot of great talent and an undefeated team from Scott Frost at US and UCF, and there's been what we like to call the creep, where they've gone from 12-1 to 10-3 to 6-4. That's how I think he's going to be perceived one way or the other.
I would agree with that. I do think it was a good hire at Tennessee.
Safe hire.
And they thought, okay, this is a guy. Gosh, we remember him 20-something years ago when he was a great player at Oklahoma. And
in fact, he handed, I guess it would have been, or let's see, when Oklahoma beat Florida State in the BCS championship.
Back in the 2000s.
The good old 13-2.
13-2.
Yeah.
And like you said, he did a great job at Missouri. But I think they were looking for – you know, everybody's looking for that offensive guy right now. And, you know, right now Tennessee, that they've just had so many guys jump in the portal. But all it takes, we all know how quickly momentum can change now. And if they feel like they've got a bit of a niche. So I thought it was a good hire and a safe hire for the Volunteers.
Yeah.
It was better than the last.
Is it one that makes you shake in your boots or anything like that as a Georgia fan or an Alabama fan? Or
No.
But it's a good safe hire.
I think he's better than the last two hires they've made, for sure.
Well, let's see here. The one before was a disaster.
Yeah.
And he's going to be having to clean up that mess.
And then Butch Jones
Before that. And he's coming in on the heels of, you know, Derek Dooley having to go in and inherit a bad situation from Lane Kiffin.
And then it
didn't work there
Fulmer.
With Dooley.
Yeah.
And I guess Jones, he did put it back together, and then it kind of fell apart on him. But – yeah, I mean, it seems like a good, solid hire, but it's funny how Tennessee has hired UCF to come up and be their football program.
No, it's amazing how that goes, and this is a crazy offseason. You know, and by the time this comes out, we'll probably know, is Kevin Steele going to stay on as the DC? That would probably be a good move for them. You know, is he going to be the assistant head coach? Who knows?
Their defensive coordinator at UCF this year was Randy Shannon, and Willie Martinez was their assistant head coach. So would we see either of them go to Knoxville? Willie's already been in Knoxville before.
I love Coach Martinez. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what Heupel's coaching staff will look like.
I would think keeping Steele would be an option, though.
Well, maybe Steele might apply for the UCF job.
He could. Or maybe Randy Shannon.
Randy Shannon gets promoted to head coach.
That's right, Dave. You do a great job of pointing out. We record this on a Wednesday afternoon.
I like everybody to know.
3:46. Yeah. So somebody's going to be listening to this on Friday. Those idiots,
exactly.
Don't they know that Central Florida's hired this guy? And Dave, I did want to mention, too, that today on Wednesday, the great Hank Aaron was laid to rest.
Yeah.
And when you talk about legends with a capital L, here are just some numbers I threw together, and we're baseball guys, okay? From 57 to 73, DJ, he hit at least 30 home runs in 15 out of 17 years. Eight of those, he had 40. One of those he didn't hit 30, he had 29.
What happened?
From 55 to 71, he batted at least 300 13 out of 17 times with a 298 and a 292. He had 11 years with at least 100 RBIs, and from 55 to 67, he had 13 consecutive 100-run seasons, 15 in all. So 100 runs or 100 RBIs in a combined 26 seasons. And here's a favorite stat, too, that if you took away his 755 home runs, he still had over 3,000 hits. It's amazing.
And probably because he played his entire career for either Milwaukee or Atlanta, he wasn't going to be in the same conversation. Well, I don't mean it that way, but it was like Willie Mays and Mickey Mantle were going to get more publicity because they played in New York. And Hank played in Milwaukee for most of his career. And then he played in the Deep South and Atlanta back in the late 60s and early 70s isn't what Atlanta is now.
And Atlanta back then was closer to the size of Athens like now.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And now it's got to be people of it, 7 million people.
Yeah,
or
so
whatever.
I mean, it's totally different. And the thing I like about it too, and Hank Aaron was my first favorite player. You know, sure. As kids, we all have favorite players. He was my first one. I did, I've said this on the air, I did my first class project report where you had to get up in front of the class and speak, you know, which is terrifying when you're having to do that the first time, was on Hank Aaron. And I will always remember that. And just he wasn't controversial. He wasn't Barry Bonds. He wasn't he could have, and I'm sure he probably held back a lot of stuff over his life, even up until his death last week, and rightfully so for the stuff that he went through. But he didn't portray it that way after he finished playing baseball.
Oh, he was an incredible class act, a tremendous ambassador for the game, and just he's one of those guys too, where we talk about sports is and always should be the great unifier, and everybody loved Hank Aaron. And as you said, the things he had to deal with and that in those times, and again, you're talking about after the 73 season, he had 713 home runs.
Right.
He's one away from the record.
And he's got to go through the entire offseason.
And he's getting death threats.
Yeah.
And he went out, I think, was it opening day when he tied it? And then, obviously.
Then there was the talk of.
Well, don't play.
Don't play in Cincinnati the rest of the series. You know, you want to break the record at home.
Yeah.
And then, as it turns out, he ends up breaking the record at Fulton County Stadium. And I guess it was Ted Turner and whoever may have been running the Braves at the time, they were smart enough to realize that Hank Aaron needs to be a part of this Braves organization.
You absolutely.
Don't put him in the front office.
Absolutely.
He can do so much good for the Braves and for baseball. Let's not have him, you know, be retired and then just kind of just be out there doing whatever. They made him the Braves, and he was a Brave for life.
And that's a great point too, Dave, because even the Yankees, with their unparalleled history and heritage, Babe Ruth and Joe DiMaggio wanted very much. You know, you see pictures, Joe DiMaggio being a bench coach for the Oakland A's, and it just didn't look right. And Ruth was semi-quasi promised a future manager's job, but you're exactly right, Ted. Hey, we all know this. He was a master salesman. And
did he want to finish his career in Milwaukee? Is
I
that why they
so.
Traded him to the Brewers?
I would guess Bud Selig might have had something to do
with
it because
that's
that was
true.
His favorite player growing up.
Yeah,
but Aaron,
they got Dave May for Hank Aaron. But I could get it. I mean, because I never really thought about it. It's like, why did they trade him to the Brewers instead of him just finishing his career with the Braves? But that must have been it, the Bud Selig tie and the Milwaukee connection.
He also deserves a lot of the credit for being a part of what John Schuerholz and Bobby Cox built with those phenomenal teams in the 90s. And just a couple of quick stories, and I know we got to go, but I can remember an old friend of mine, his dad saying when the Braves were just, you remember we used to watch them, they were awful in the late 80s. So, they just hired another hitting coach. My God, Hank Aaron works for the team. Just have him go down there and talk to him. But there was a good story, too, that a friend of mine had sent me about the great Ernie Johnson, who was a pitcher and then, of course, a legendary broadcaster for the Braves. And somebody asked, well, Aaron didn't always get off to the best start. And he goes, well, here's the thing. He didn't like batting gloves. So he'd get off to a little slow start, but his hands, and he'd just have blisters, and they'd be bloody and everything. And he said, by around early to mid-May, he said, when those blisters would callus up, you knew.
Yeah.
It was about on. To get
game on.
So they would always kind of go peek down and see how the hammer's hands looked. And they said, oh, boy, when those things had blistered over, he was going to have a day.
A day. And he had many. Even with all the stats you threw out there, it's just amazing to think that I believe I read there were 60 greater seasons of home runs than his greatest season.
47.
Never hit 50,
no.
47 home runs, but the consistency of it to get to 755 was amazing.
And his RBI record, 2297, yeah, still stands.
As does his total bases record.
Yeah.
Also still stands.
So, I mean, you look like when you're talking about average hits, homers, total bases, doubles. I mean, he's up at the runs scored. He's up at the top. And all of them. And I always go back. I was texting with the great Manny Diaz the other day, who is a tremendous baseball fan, and I'd send him a little clip of Roberto Clemente making a throw. And I said, by the way, how about the NL 1960s all-decade outfield? Clemente, Mays, and Aaron. That's pretty strong right there.
Yeah. I mean, that's insane.
That might be the best ever.
That is insane. It really is. Hey, a couple of other quick notes. They're both baseball notes. Jeff, Georgia baseball. I believe I saw on Twitter our man Gordon Beckham was on a podcast and said he was hanging it up. I don't if that's not the case, but I think I saw that, and I just wanted to throw out there that, you know, Josie's on a vacation far away, a young freshman in 2006, Georgia going to the College World Series, and then the season that Georgia had in 2008, but Georgia's greatest player in my book. I just wanted to give a shout-out to Gordon if he has kind of hung it up. He had over 800 hits in his big league career. And for the he was a first-round draft pick of the White Sox. What are we, 12, 13 years later? A long, solid major league career, but a tip of the old cap to Gordon Beckham.
Well, and certainly one of the great athletes and one of the most beloved players in any sport in Georgia history. And I just never will forget that last trip to the plate against NC State and how electric it was at Foley Field. Just a wonderful family. And we love the Beckhams, and hopefully Gordon's going to be around here a whole bunch.
Yeah, and the other thing I want to note, our man Anthony Dasher at UGASports.com had a story that I saw today that Jonathan Cannon has mono, and he had talked to Strickland. So he says at least the first 3 weeks of the season, but that is a tough one as we are less than a month away from getting the season going, and we've seen other Georgia athletes over the years have mono and struggle coming back, and hopefully Jonathan will be able to make a comeback. But this is the guy that I think it was going to be the anchor of the rotation, potentially in a first-round draft pick.
DJ, I agree with you. You could see last year with Hancock, Wilcox, and Webb when Cannon would come out, he's the next guy, you know, following Losey and Kristofak as well. And you know, that the thing with that mono, and you know, who knows, it affects different people in different ways. I remember Alex McCree was a great pitcher for us. He got it, and it, you know, he was just never the same coming back. We had a women's basketball player, Rebecca Rouse, and he was terrific. She missed an entire season, and it just weakens you so much. And I think one of the things that hits some athletes when they get it is you come back, you felt so bad. You think you're 100%, but you're only like 60%. You just feel kind of icky. So hopefully at some point he can come back. And maybe we're in a position and he gets back to 100% and he's got a fresh arm around early to mid-May. You know, but
maybe it's like getting somebody at the trade deadline.
There you go. But I hate to hear that because he is a special young talent.
Yeah. And first and foremost, you know, we wish him nothing but the best for his health and everything else. And then hopefully he can – you know, get back with the team.
The old kissing disease, mono.
Yeah, and Rebecca Rousey, so she was sidelined by it. And now she can dissect the cells that have to do with it and all that.
Curing COVID, man. She's a genius.
Incredible.
Yeah, she's been on the front lines of
incredible.
It.
Incredible. Where is she in – where is she?
I don't know.
She's
either probably up in Minnesota at the Mayo Clinic or the CDC or something.
Very impressive.
She literally is a certified genius.
Yeah. So if she walked in the room right now, we would not be the smartest people in the room.
That'd be like if the Stitch Gums came in here. But listen, me and Dave, we can't even spell y'all's majors.
Exactly.
Okay?
So, and we didn't even combine for a 4-0.
No, not even close.
Oh, great stuff, Jeff. I enjoyed it. We'll do it again next week. Thanks so much for joining us here on the Crossover Podcast. Again, 960 The Ref and the 960 The Ref app, which you can find in the App Store with your iPhone or Google Play with your Android. And as we said, episode 172, just cooking right along here. He's Jeff Dantzler. I'm David Johnston. Thanks so much for joining us here. This has been the Crossover Podcast, 960 The Ref and the 960 The Ref app.
You've been listening to the Crossover on 960theref.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.